Welcome to Southern Living Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Leslie Hunt. I'm your volunteer broadcaster, and I'll be reading from the Southern Living Magazine, the June-July 225 edition, as we still haven't gotten an updated magazine to read yet. So if you're ready to go, I've got two great articles that will just really be entertaining. The first article is entitled City of Gold, and this was written by John Archibald, and this is in the Long Weekend section of Southern Living Magazine. Reliving old memories and making new ones in the storied town of Dahlonega, Georgia. There's shiny stuff swirling in the pan, flecks of mica and pyrite and who knows what, but only fools and greenhorns mistake it for gold. You'll have to ignore a lot of sparkles to find what's truly valuable. Swish until the loose sediment washes away, until heavy black sand is all that's left. If you're lucky and patient, you'll spot a yellow glint of gold. Unmistakable. You'll know it when you see it. Dopamine will kick in, and the hair will stand up on the back of your neck. Some people really do yell, "Eureka!" My dad was a Methodist preacher from a long line of them. He gave a sermon about gold fever once, decades ago, after our annual trip to Dahlonega, Georgia, about an hour northeast of Atlanta. It might have been around greed. It might have been about hope. It might have been about chasing shiny things. My kind of place. The Dahlonega Square is different now than how I knew it as a child when my friends counted men with prospector beards as if they were Guernsey cattle in a game of cow pasture golf. Now there's a yoga studio and a jerky store, a market selling only British curiosities, a peddler of vintage musical instruments, and even a dessertery. There's a toy and game shop of a type that might, in more tiresome locales, refer to itself as a shop, spelled S-H-O-P-P-E, maybe even an old, O-L-D-E, one. Yum buskers strum ukuleles outside Brad Walker Pottery on this day, harmonizing to a Jason Bratz song that was popular before they were born. It's a good spot across from Connie's Ice Cream and Sandwich Shop and catty corner to the Fudge Factory, which has an aroma every bit as mercerizing as the shimmer of gold. In the middle of this square is the old courthouse, and in that building is a museum telling Dahlonega's story. In 1828, a man named Benjamin Parks stubbed his toe on a stone. He looked down to curse that offending rock and saw it was yellow. You know what happened next. Dopamine, hair on the neck, America's first gold rush. It is here where gold for Georgia's Capitol Dome was mined. A U.S. mint for a time processed North Georgia gold into legal tender, and before the Civil War, this place was lousy with prospectors and gamblers. It was a ne'er-do-well's refuge, a lawless, ungovernable community. Dahlonega has always been my kind of place. A quirky balance. I admit I have long felt a false sense of belonging to this town and these hills, an undeserved sense of ownership. I came to Dahlonega every summer of my life until recently to a tiny cabin my grandfather Holland built on church camp land. It was barely more than a hut without hot water, a TV, or phone line, when that was still mattering. That was how Dad wanted to keep it, and we kids came to agree, if grudgingly. It was a spiritual and natural retreat, a haven from the harshness of the world. So I fished in its ponds, stomped through creeks that glittered with mica, tubed down rivers like the Chedeti, and panned for Georgia gold. The memories are like still photos in the story of me. I see myself as a small child running with abandon on paths lined with mountain laurel. I see my children doing the same. These moments trigger emotions I can't adequately convey. Fried chicken with Dad at the Wagon Wheel restaurant, the meat and three he loved best, and the sad fact that they are both now gone. Pizza on the square with my daughter, pepperoni, banana peppers, and feta became something personal. Fourth of July fireworks at the University of North Georgia gave us cause to talk about the real meaning of freedom, of liberty for all, and the sacrifices made by those who truly value those concepts. A lot of shiny stuff swirls in my brain when I think of those times, and I didn't want this place to change. I cussed when Walmart came, even when it sold live worms from a vending machine, day and night. I howled when the county built a fine new high school near the camp where Holland Hut stood. How dare they value education, I moaned as highways widened, as Atlanta turned North Georgia into a suburb, as companies raised hillsides to make malls for local convenience. I still grouse as I shop at them all. Preciousness is a complicated thing. Dahlonega has changed, but it has held to the character that made it what it was. What else can you ask of a town or a person? This village has found a quirky balance. It somehow appeals to bikers and hikers and rebels and revelers, to students and aging flower children, to old men with prospector beards and young people with prospector beards and fingernail polish. Change, I remind myself, is not always pain. I panned for gold in Dahlonega as a boy at the Crisson and Consolidated gold mines. I took my kids there to do the same. By the time they were grown, I had filled a vial with tiny nuggets substantial enough to clink against the glass. Then, somehow, it disappeared in a move or in a house cleaning accident. I don't worry about the gold. I spent more time searching for it than it was actually worth. But I felt the loss. That vial meant far more to me than the metal inside. Simple, yet extraordinary. Recently, I returned to Dahlonega with my wife, Alicia, to separate the shiny stuff from the precious. I panned for gold and found a few nuggets that would clink against glass. We saw a fawn run behind the inn at Blackberry Hill, a place that's as cozy as Holland Hut was Spartan, with an innkeeper so serene I can now acknowledge that foregoing comfort is not the only way to find a haven from the world's harshness. At the Dahlonega Butterfly Farm, we fed these colorful insects from nectar-soaked swabs. This simple and wondrous moment was cut short by a thunderstorm. It rained, but didn't dampen our spirits any. Thunder here reminds me of Rip Van Winkle rolling ninepins in the hills. Of the past of time, the magic of things you see when you dare to stop and look. The Holland Hut is no more. Our claim to it died with my parents. On a spring morning in 2019, their survivors hiked to one of Mom's favorite spots above a waterfall she thought sacred. We spread her ashes as the sun rose and the whole sky turned pink. I cried as I left, not just for Mom, because I knew it was her time, but for this place. It was no longer mine. I knew that day, perhaps, that it never had been. I am pleased to return, if only to understand that no one can stake a claim to the things that are genuinely precious, the wonder of nature, the kindness of neighbors and strangers, the memories we make and share and hold dear in places like this. Eureka! They are worth much more than gold. So, if you want to plan your Dahlonega getaway, I've got the scoop. Where to go? Visit the Dahlonega Gold Museum in the old courthouse at the center of town to learn the unvarnished truth about the nation's first gold rush. Take the mine tour deep into the earth, but not that deep, at the Consolidated Gold Mine. You can pan for gold and hunt for gems there, though we struck it richer this time at the Crisson Gold Mine. I asked my children what they remember most fondly about Dahlonega, and two out of the three said the Dahlonega General Store, located on the square. When you're done, there's a fudge shop, a chocolate shop, and an ice cream shop. And there's also a place that bills itself as a chocolate fudge and ice cream spot. Try them all, but start with the Fudge Factory. And don't sleep on the antique malls down the street. They'll suck up an entire afternoon. If you're looking for a low-key, feel-good moment for less than $10, stop by the Dahlonega Butterfly Farm. Sit, walk around, or chat with the informative workers about the stages of a butterfly's life, or your own if they will let you. This part of Georgia is stunning, from the Blue Ridge Mountain scenery to the many cascades like Dix Creek Falls and Amicaloa Falls, to name just a couple. Chattahoochee National Forest, where the Appalachian Trail begins, has hundreds of miles of hiking paths and even more miles of trout stream. Kayakers and canoeists can take advantage of Class 1 and 2 rapids on the Chetati and Etowah Rivers. Casual tubers can float either one, or heck, just sit there, look at the mountains, and listen to the creeks and the crickets until you know their songs. Next up, where to eat? The Smith House has been serving Southern meats and vegetables family style since the Prohibition era. Only a few restaurants in the world made my grandmother nod along. This was one. My wife has celiac disease and can't have gluten at all, and the Bourbon Street Grill took her needs in stride, bless their kind hearts. You can get gator, gumbo, or, quote, swamp salad, end quote, which was really just a salad with your choice of protein, anything from crawfish to steak to meatless meat. I was a sucker for their muffaletta, but then I always am. Shenanigans Irish Pub, another dining experience that suited my wife's dietary needs, has classic pub grub. They offer bangers and mash and Irish stew and Guinness galore. There was music in the parking lot outside on our last trip, not traditional jigs or reels, but a guy singing Jimmy Buffett tunes and such. He didn't get a whole lot of attention, but he should have. I figured come Monday he'd be all right. The nearby picnic cafe and dessertery reminds me of my mom, of important moments with my grandmother, of ladies at church when I was a kid who knew that egg salad was an art and pimento cheese a science, or the other way around. The place is neither fancy nor pretentious, despite its name. Whether you're having breakfast or lunch, there's always something sweet at the end. It's like being at a wedding without the stress. Where to stay? I'm a mountain snob, the kind who believes a retreat is for retreating from the modern world and the human contact that comes with it. I realized, after staying at the inn at Blackberry Hill, that I've been, to put a finer point on it, an idiot. My epiphany is partly due to the lodgings themselves. Sure, rustic is great, but I quickly got used to the luxurious furnishings here, with fine linens and other comforts. Our room, the Manor Suite, opened to a view of mountains by day and stars by night. My change of heart, though, was really due to innkeeper Tammy Nash, an unobtrusive, kind host who makes sure snacks and wine are available at all hours, which means a midnight tiptoe to the dining room leads to home-baked treats so tempting they'll chase away any regret. Nash cooks breakfast for each guest and even made some gluten-free pancakes for my wife. Other options include Dahlonega Inn on Main, located in an 1846 colonial-style building that's within walking distance of everything. If you prefer to be in the middle of the action, the Hall House Hotel is the only lodging option on the square. End of story. You are listening to Southern Living Magazine on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Leslie Hunt, your volunteer broadcaster. Continuing on, our next article is called The Magic of Mont LeConte by Cameron Beale. It was 7 o'clock on a cool summer evening in East Tennessee as my mom and I grabbed extra layers and headlamps to make the short trek to Cliff Tops, an area known for extraordinary sunsets, if not also the best view in Great Smoky Mountains National Park, just a quarter mile from LeConte Lodge. Since arriving in the afternoon, we'd been mostly enveloped in a blanket of clouds, but were hopeful for a glorious evening show. Just as we reached the rocky outcropping, the veil of clouds started to rise, revealing a vast blue-green horizon. The sky slowly began to fill with soft pink and orange hues to the east. It took on a deep purple color. We settled in for the nearly hour-long sunset as I counted up to 10 ridgelines in the distance. That's the magic of Mount LeConte. I've long reveled in the beauty of the Great Smoky Mountains, but there are few places within the park's 452,427 acres more significant to me than Mount LeConte, a 6,593-foot massive that stands more than a vertical mile above the tourist attractions of Gatlinburg. It's not only the park's third tallest peak, but also the home to the LeConte Lodge, an iconic spot that has welcomed hikers for 100 years. At 6,360 feet, it's the highest elevation lodge east of the Mississippi. One night atop LeConte and you'll be itching to return. It might take a little more huffing and puffing to reach than your average mountain stay. It's accessible only the old-fashioned way, on your own 2 feet, but it's worth every step. You'll be rewarded with a sense of accomplishment upon reaching the summit and also the peace and calm that come with the undisturbed natural surroundings. Folks coming up here know what they're getting into, says John Northrup, the lodge's general manager. They love coming year after year, generation after generation, because the lodge offers comfort, but still holds true to the things that don't need to change, which allows you to really disconnect. That's the root of who we are and what draws you in and makes this place so special. While you can also day hike or camp in the nearby backcountry shelter that's run by the National Park Service, NPS, overnight reservations for LeConte Lodge are so coveted that they book up almost immediately upon release each October. The operation provides all you need for your stay, bunk beds with fresh linens, potable water, propane heaters, flush toilets, and 2 hearty meals. Because there's no electricity, people gather in the dining room to play card games and sip hot cocoa by the light of kerosene lamps. Growing up an hour away, I explored plenty of the park's 848 miles of hiking paths, but the 5-mile Alum Cave Trail holds a special place in my heart. Although the lodge operates only seasonally from mid-March through the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we had an old family tradition of hiking up on Christmas Eve Eve. I was 12 the first time I summited, despite the ice, snow, and heavy pack on my back. That year we stayed in the NPS shelter, which is just beyond the cabins before you reach High Top, the true summit, that's marked with a cairn, a pile of stones used to indicate an important spot. In the years that followed, my dad befriended J.P. Kroll, the winter caretaker at the time, and we'd hike up carrying a gourmet feast and share a meal in the lodge's kitchen. Our holiday tradition has summited despite the ice, snow, and heavy pack on my back. Our holiday tradition has faded since my dad's passing in 2016, but I have continued to seek out the solitude of LeConte with day trips and, most recently, this overnight visit with my mom. He passed down his love of the mountain to me, and it seems like nothing has changed since our first hike. Few other places can feel both enchanting and grounding. While I find solace in the quietness of the off-season, there's so much beauty from spring through fall, not only in the flora and fauna, but also in the people who run the site. Last summer was the first time I'd experienced LeConte Lodge in full swing as its 100th season celebrations kicked into gear. Life atop LeConte. Depending on whom you ask, the centennial year is up for debate, but the irrefutable fact is that the lodge predates, and that was integral to the founding of Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Its beginning is credited to both Jack Huff, the son of a local innkeeper, and Paul Adams, a young naturalist. In 1924, area officials commissioned Adams to set up a camp to host key NPS decision makers on Mount LeConte, hoping that once they experienced this wilderness firsthand, it would inspire establishment of the park. The following year, Adams discovered Basin Spring, a natural source of fresh water, and created a permanent canvas tent camp that hosted the first paying guests in July. He spent that winter on Lecompte building a primitive log cabin. In the spring of 1926, Huff took over and began constructing a 32-bed bunkhouse with a fireplace, similar to the timber and stone buildings you see there today, and painted Lecompte Lodge over the door. During his tenure on the mountain, Huff built the heart of Lecompte Lodge, some of which still stands, including a few guest cabins that have since undergone renovations. Furnishings, bunk beds and chairs, and most importantly, the dining hall, which was finished in 1939 and was the catalyst for the lodge's family-style meal tradition. Huff and his wife Pauline even honeymooned and raised their two children here before transitioning ownership in 1960. Since then, only a few structural modifications and modern changes have been made. Wood-burning stoves were replaced by propane heaters, and horses and mules were swapped for llamas. Their feet are softer and less damaging to the ground. For the most part, it remains true to its original design and basic amenities. In more recent years, porches have been added to the cabins, a perk I cherished upon arrival. After checking in and dropping our packs, Mom and I sat in our rocking chairs relishing the view. As we soaked in the slower pace, we reflected on our memories of the mountain, including her first ascent during the early years of dating my dad, until the dinner bell rang at 6 o'clock. In true camp fashion, a crew member assigned us a table where we sat among like-minded adventurers, a young couple on a weekend getaway, a husband and wife celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary, and two friends reuniting for their yearly trip as we passed around heaping bowls of beef and gravy, mashed potatoes, green beans, stewed apples, and cornbread. Stewarding a legacy. While there have been many caretakers of the landmark, such as Tim Line, who spent about 40 years at the helm, Northrop now carries the torch. Before becoming general manager in 2017, he served 3 seasons on the 10-person crew who live on the mountain during the 8-month period, worked on the llama farm in town, and was the lodge's site manager. But his affinity for the place long predates his career here. Northrop first came as a guest in 1994 with his family. We'd always take a spring break trip to the Smokies, and once we got old and strong enough, we started doing bigger climbs, which included Lecompte, says the Michigan native. The annual pilgrimage instilled his deep love for the area, and after college in 2010, he joined the crew. One season wasn't enough, so I came back for a second, which is when I met my wife, Northrop says. He's dedicated to keeping the wonder of Lecompte alive. Quote, I continued to get more attached to this place. I want folks to experience this mountain like I did and gain an appreciation for the natural environment around us and understand why we're committed to protecting and preserving the park. If we can give them a hot meal, a comfy bed, and a great time on the trails, enjoying a beautiful sunset and maybe seeing a deer or a black bear, then it's fulfilling for me, and I know it is for our crew as well. End quote. Take in the journey. You don't have to be an avid hiker to make this trek. You'll share trails with all walks of life, from day trippers wearing jeans to runners breezing past as if you were at sea level. I've seen kids who have yet to hit ages in the double digits alongside people in their 80s. The shortest of the 6 routes, and my favorite, as it's the one I grew up hiking, is the Alum Cave Trail at around 5 miles with 2,600 feet of elevation gain. While it's also the busiest route and includes challenging sections with open rock faces, the amazing vistas and unique features such as Arch Rock and the Alum Cave Bluffs make it well worth it. As you ascend, you'll cross hand-hewn log bridges and walk among massive rhododendrons that give way to the vibrant ferns and rock formations covered in moss and lichen. Waterfall runoff trickles down the rocks as fields of wildflowers and native grasses come into view. When you enter the last half-mile stretch where the path flattens out before Hallelujah Turn, you're almost there, the forest becomes a canopy of moss and root-connected trees that sway as one in the breeze and gives the sense of being in a tunnel to another world. For a more gradual route to the top, many favor Trillium Gap Trail. The 6.7-mile path is named for the trilliums that blossom each spring and is loved for its access to Grotto Falls and the possibility of llama encounters. Other hikes include Rainbow Falls Trail, which showcases its namesake waterfall, Bullhead Trail, nearly 7 miles long and known for wildflowers, and Brushy Mountain Trail, perfect for ardent hikers as it's the longest trail at just over 9 miles. After our stay, Mom and I explored the Boulevard Trail and its new second favorite path. This uncrowded 8.1-mile roller coaster-like walk along the ridgeline also connects with the Appalachian Trail for a few miles. Get the full experience. Enjoying the sunrise at Myrtle Point is a must. You'll have a bird's-eye view of the valleys below, with mountaintops peeking through a sea of clouds. It looks like a body of water speckled with islands as far as the eye can see. On this particularly chilly late summer morning, we woke at 6 a.m. and made our way to the short trail. The only lights were from a few fellow early risers with their headlights bobbing in the dark. We reached Myrtle Point before the first rays of color appeared on the horizon and sat in quiet anticipation, not wanting to disturb the peaceful stillness. A majestic scene unfolded before us as rich tones filled the sky and the soft morning glow illuminated the green foliage with a golden warmth. An hour later, with the sun fully risen, we peeled ourselves away to catch the 8 a.m. breakfast bell. Passing High Top on the way back, we stopped to add a rock to the cairn. Escaping from the distractions of day-to-day life in the valley makes memories on Licon extra vivid, which is why I feel especially connected to my dad here. When you're standing high above the clouds, everything feels lighter. The air might be a bit thinner, but somehow I can always breathe a little easier. Before you go, know this. Make your lodge reservations in advance. Bookings for the following year open in early October and fill up almost immediately, but you can call directly for cancellations or submit a waiting list form through their website, lecontlodge.com. Spelled LECONTELODGE. Plan for limited parking. It's best to get dropped off by a friend or take a shuttle, but if you bring your own car, you'll need to obtain a paid pass ahead of time from the National Park Service. This can be also bought online. Be sure to arrive early at the trailhead to find a spot. Pack layers. Yes, this tip applies year-round, even in the summer. It often is 10 to 20 degrees cooler on top of the mountain. Visit the blog High on Leconte to learn up-to-date summit conditions before your trip. End of story. Well, this wraps up our show for today. This is Leslie Hunt, your volunteer broadcaster on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Stay tuned for the East Valley News coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.